This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 149, AR Through the Looking Glass. Hello and welcome to yet again another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm here on a delightful Friday and I'm joined by my co-host, Michael Rowe.
Hi, Michael. Delightful co-host.
I was going to say delightful. I should have said delightful.
I am delighted to be delightful.
Well, somebody needs to be. Hey, look, we have got all kinds of augmented reality stuff to talk about today. So let's jump right to it, shall we?
We shall.
I saw a piece of interesting material come through my feeds this afternoon from my high school, the North Carolina School of Science and Math. And one of the graduates of this school is a guy by the name of Alex Hornstein.
Stein?
I don't know. Could be Stein. It'd be Stein if it was pronounced Germany, but it might be Steen in the U.S. So anyway, Alex, among other people here. What?
No, that's his name. Dude.
Oh, man. So the Alex. Article about Alex is talking about the work that he's been doing in 3D displays.
This is awesome. And
it really is awesome. So if you dial yourself over, and you can find all this over at the gamesatwork.biz website, to the lookingglassfactory.com website, you can see what Alex and his company have created to reflect a true 3D interface that you can actually see and work with and use for modeling, for watching holograms that are not just the 3D holograms that if you look at them from one angle or from another angle or from another angle, they look a little different, but this is actually three-dimensional representation of light in a three-dimensional space that you can see moving in three dimensions. It is really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to envision this, if you haven't gone over to gamesatwork.biz and clicked on the show notes, is a fish tank. I mean, to me, it looks like an aquarium. Mm-hmm. And it's this, they call it the volume, right? And it really is. It's a volume of space. And the best I can tell, it's a bunch of clear sheets of display material that then give the pixelization and location of each pixel in three-dimensional space. And so you really get that depth and sense. And as you were describing, as you move your head around the display, you are looking at it from different angles. It's not just, you know, one of the tricks that they do in games, or they have done in the past in games, is they always make like a tree to where the part that looks like the tree of the, you know, the bushy part of the tree with the branches and the leaves, it always turns towards your camera view. So as you move your camera around in 3D space in a game, it just keeps that facing towards you, which gives it a sense that it's a full volume of space, even though pixel-wise in 3D space in the game, it's a lot less in order to give you performance. But here you actually have a three-dimensional volume of space with each of the pixels so that the pixels can be placed relative to each other in three-dimensional space and allow you to get that real sensation of, great name for the product, volume, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think you've explained it exceptionally well with it being like an aquarium, right? Because the light is beamed up from the bottom into this aquarium type of environment through a technology that they call light folding. And those pixels are suspended in the volume space, creating a three-dimensional display that you can walk your way around and you can check out extraordinarily easily. And what I like really almost the best about this, Michael, is that there's no need for any kind of headgear.
Right. Or even glasses. I mean, or
anything, even glasses,
right?
At all.
Yeah. Right. And the thing that I like is it's actually multicolor, right? It's not, you know, just mm-hmm. a simple green view, right? I mean, they're showing examples in here of, you know, video of someone looking at their kids, of taking almost like a digital clay and shaping it in 3D space. So as if you're trying to model something with somebody, I can imagine actually having these devices in two places, and connecting them together. So in a distance mode, you and I could be separated by half the globe and still work together in three-dimensional space.
Yeah, absolutely. And now they have this available. So this is their second iteration. They've sold more than 2,000 units of this, and they're kind of moving it forward a little a la Kickstarter fashion, where you can jump in now and get one, and they're looking to ramp up to be more commercially available with a higher price point over time as these get more and more available, I think is probably the right word. So fantastic way of looking at three-dimensional objects and being able to work with them in a collaborative way.
Yeah, and I mean, really, it's a dev kit that they're selling right now, right? It's $1,000 round number for their limited quantity of their dev kit. And if you're working any type of 3D work, it'd be great to have, you know, haven't played with it, haven't seen it in person, but from their video, it looks like a really compelling technology for building out 3D content in 3D space.
So related very closely to this concept is what we've been talking about now for a while around the dichotomy between augmented reality and virtual reality. And there was a interview that took place in Japan with BuzzFeed while Tim Cook from Apple was in Japan, and getting a little extra insight into what Apple's strategy is around augmented reality and virtual reality. The article and the interview with Tim really talks about the concept that Michael, you and I have been on for a while, that of the two, augmented reality potentially has more promise. And part of the reason, at least in my mind, of the more promise, and we've said this multiple times, is that you're able to interact with the world around you and see not just the technology overlays, but you can see the world around you, which is a little bit different than the idea of a virtual reality environment where you might be wearing your ski goggle type environment. You could see the real world and the virtual world, but it's superimposed together.
Yeah, so, one of the things I've been thinking about that, because yeah, we have talked about this a lot, and I absolutely agree, the interaction with the real world is important. Matter of fact, that's what makes it compelling. And we've talked about different use cases of training and we'll talk about one in a few minutes too of where those two are coming together. But it's interesting to me. I've been thinking about this lately on what is when you take and look at the physics and the visual inputs that you need to do to overlay augmented reality in a realistic way into the physical world, right? So understanding a 3D camera enough so that I can see that there's a chair 3 feet in front of me and that I want to have your augmented avatar sitting in that chair so that we can interact directly and not falling through the chair or, you know, one of the big things you see in games, and we saw this in the virtual world space, where the avatars were like halfway through a chair because the positioning of the avatar or the model and the other things in the space were not lined up correctly. So if I am taking augmented reality capabilities and I'm overlaying digital input on top of the physical world through some kind of lens, why have we not seen the inverse of that? And what I mean by that is those big ski goggles that you talked about, like the Oculus Rift or other ones. Why haven't we seen anyone take those and actually put a camera on the outside to bring the real world into that world, right?
Right.
So instead of taking the virtual world and overlaying it on the real world, through augmented reality? What about taking the real world and overlaying it on the virtual world through camera input?
Yeah, and you know, my feeling is that that's got to have been done somewhere. I mean, that's what, if I were spending my working days and nights in this environment, that's exactly what I would be doing, Michael. And then that way you're blending the two and getting the benefit of the two. The one challenge there is that as you're experiencing your environment through an Oculus or similar type of ski goggle-esque kind of thing, you might want to move around in that three-dimensional space, the real space, and then that can create some problems because you will have the tunnel vision that those kind of cameras would necessarily wind up giving you. You can't get the same, well, I mean, I guess you could, right? But it'd be difficult to get the same level of visual input from every angle.
The amount of calculation and rendering that I need to do to take a virtual thing and overlay it on the real world is less than the amount of calculation and rendering I do to take the physical world and overlay it into the virtual world.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I guess if you think of something like Magic Leap, right, where they're really trying to show that blended reality, augmented reality vision, that probably makes the most sense from today's level of computing power. And the point that you made, I think, was really relevant on, kind of the interaction, right? If I'm in a virtual space and trying to interact with the real world, then I have to be cognizant of the space that I'm in a virtual space, and I can't necessarily walk 3 feet ahead of me. If I'm in the real world and I'm overlaying an augmented space on top of it, then I physically know the dimensions of the real world that I'm in, and I can then know that I can't walk through that wall that I'm about to hit.
Exactly. I mean, I'm reminded, Michael, of the show we did some time ago where there was kind of a circular treadmill, right? That you could walk on that treadmill and go really in any direction.
Cool. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that would allow you to navigate the virtual space effectively, which could be really good, but it might not be the intent.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about this article, right, was really, while we haven't seen much of what Apple is doing in this space, I think there are a couple of early things that we saw. Early on in Apple Maps, they would do the 3D fly-throughs of physical space where they would tend to re-render the map based off of photography onto the three-dimensional space. That's kind of that space. We saw some apps. Yelp did their Monocle years ago where you would overlay pop-ups on top of the real world for restaurant reviews. And then obviously the most current one that everybody talked about, which was pseudo-augmented reality, which was Pokemon Go. But Apple has been, in their traditional fashion, buying up and acquiring skills and technology in the augmented space. You know, PrimeSense, the people that made the Microsoft Kinect capturing sensors. They've hired away some people from the Oculus team. They've hired engineers for the Magic Leap team. They've got patents out there around head-mounted displays. And probably the most interesting one that you and I were talking about that the article calls out is what they're doing with their new W1 chip. And this is the chip that they announced at the September event that's powering their AirPods, which are not yet available, which really add a whole bunch of additional sensors into, and this is a term I've been using in some of my day job work, hearables, right? So things that are attached to your ears, but they're more than just a microphone and a speaker. These are wearable sensors that can provide a lot of context and data around the physical world that you're in. So I can really imagine, and they kind of hint at it here, that the hearables with the AirPod and others like Braggy and other companies could really change the, I don't want to use the word calculation, but the interaction in augmented reality, because you have a lot more data and sensors around location, around space, around direction, around physiological stuff. Braggy has heart monitors and other sensors in their earbuds for their wireless earbuds to do like fitness type activities. And you can start taking sensor reading and impact the augmented space based off of real world data.
Right. I mean, you're going Internet of Things route, and I'm 100% with you. The thought that struck me as we were talking about this in the pre-show was that the hearables, as you've coined that term there, are in a lot of ways augmented reality devices.
Yep.
When you think augmented reality, most of the time you're thinking vision, right? So you can control the audio. You can go to the left ear. You can go to the right ear. Your headphones could whisper into you because they are aware of where you are based upon your GPS information from your phone or watch or whatever else. You know, hey, you know, you need to pick up the milk from the store over there. Remember, there was a reminder of that. And instead of giving a something that buzzes on your phone or your watch, it could whisper that in your ear, or it could tell you, hey, the person you're standing nearby is Michael, and make sure you ask him about that piece of work you were working on together, you know, 6 months ago, and see how he's doing with that, you know?
Absolutely. So it's not just visual. You take the Google Glass fears that everybody had, that it would do face recognition and overlay content in the real world, and you put it in somebody's ear, and make it much more natural, but it could still have the same use cases, right?
Exactly. And it might be better, right? So instead of the Google Glass experience where, you know, it looks like you're staring off into the distance or down at a shoe or something, you know, you're not making the eye contact, which is at least in US and many other cultures sort of a natural way of doing things, you could be providing information in the ear.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a rather incredible potential next step, just as you have with just you know, other wearable devices that can signal you through various buzzes, beats, or other methods about something that's going on right now.
Beep, boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we already have ringtones, right? So what would be there to prevent us from having geofence tones, right?
Exactly.
You know, you're now close enough to your favorite burger place, you know, and you get a tone when that happens. Oh, you're right. It's right over there. Okay. And those could be advertising related too. So you might subscribe or... if we go to our smart contracts discussion from our last conversation, you could say, I'm willing to be alerted to or notified that I am within a mile of a burger place, right? And I'm okay with my getting a tone letting me know which one it is, so I might choose to go there because it's around about lunchtime. I'm kind of hungry anyway, and off I go.
Yeah, I think the key thing there, and this is – I don't think you can talk augmented reality without talking Internet of Things at the same time, because it's about time, space, contacts, and data together to create a statement or a perception of value to drive a use case.
And when you consider, too, just the amount of instrumentation that's going on, you're right. All of those pieces do work hand in glove together.
Yep.
Ah, mind-blowing stuff. See, did you know we were going to go here?
Absolutely.
I dropped my pencil. I was just, you know, in like, awe. Wow. Aww. All right, so let's get real. Or maybe not real.
Let's get real serious.
You know, let's get assisty, right? So assisty? Article in TechCrunch.
Yes.
Earlier this week.
Yes.
About a local team of neurosurgeons using Microsoft's version of the technology here, the HoloLens, to do an assistance on tricky brain surgery where there are aspects of of surgery, brain surgery in particular, where you don't necessarily want to crack open the head all the way. You want to get to a point where you can do the necessary operation with the smallest possible incision. And as you are inserting the appropriate elements into someone's brain, you would want to be very, very careful that you don't do something incorrect, putting something in too far or not far enough. And you could use augmented reality to see essentially inside someone's head and know exactly when to stop.
Yeah, this was really, really cool. And I think it goes back to, you know, it's easier to overlay an augmented thing into the real world instead of the other way around, right? And so looking at what they've done, and granted, there's an attached video, and the video, as they say, is a bit janky. This is early stuff, but the concepts are phenomenal. You instrument the cameras with the catheter in this case, once it recognizes the catheter and it recognizes the position of the brain inside of the skull, based off of positioning there, you then have the ability to sense the placement of the catheter through the hole in the skull into the position inside the brain where, in this case, the example that they're using, there's a liquid pool of fluid that is causing issues in part of the brain, and they want to get to that liquid, but it's so far in the brain that, as you say, you can't cut it open and expose it in any safe manner. Being able to thread the catheter down to where that point is in the brain correctly, without having another set of eyes down there through this augmented overlay, is phenomenal. This to me is where a lot of the value is going to come in, is to give people that X-ray vision into things that can greatly improve a procedure, whether that's a medical procedure or a work procedure or an entertainment procedure.
Well, and I could imagine too, Michael, where something like this would be a lovely robotic element as well, so that you're providing the robot assisted elements of a surgery like this the ability to see what it needs to see and adjust as well, because brain surgery, handheld catheters, you know, a lot of stuff could not go exactly right.
Just don't
there
sneeze.
So could be something really interesting here too going forward. And
Once you have the ability to very minutely and accurately identify in 3D space with this type of things, then the natural reaction to go to robotics makes sense too, because now you have the precision of, you know, a robot which is not going to sneeze, being able to position that catheter correctly and accurately in the brain at the space where you need it, etc.
And you can see it all happening through the augmented reality environment.
Absolutely.
Which is an important thing for the surgeon who is being assisted by such technologies. So it doesn't mean that it would go away. It actually means it'd be very useful.
Absolutely.
So our last link is very much in the same space here. And this is an example where we've had our augmented audio reality, our augmented video reality. Here's our augmented touch reality. So we're talking about a robot in this hand, in this case being a hand, a set of fingers, where a man with a spinal injury can actually feel pressure being placed on those robotic fingers attached to the man himself.
Yeah, so this is awesome.
Are things coming together here in just a very interesting way around all these technologies, around human experience and around extending human experience in your mind, Michael?
Well, I think it's a logical progression. And, you know, 10 years ago, when you and I first started podcasting, you do realize last month was our 10th year anniversary of podcasting. And we missed
I meant to celebrate that, but I didn't realize that.
Yes.
Wow.
September 2006, I think, is when we published our first Dancing with Wookiees podcast.
Wow.
So 10 years of podcasting, different topics, different shows, but just phenomenal, phenomenal. You, me, and Leo Lepore. we were talking back then, we called it digital convergence, right? Which was
right.
The idea that because so many different technologies are digitizing the world, we are going to see new business models and new technologies and new capabilities all accelerating into some really powerful things. And, you know, we talked augmented reality, virtual reality, 3D modeling, 3D visualizations, et cetera, all through this discussion just today. And then to take the learning that has occurred, right, and talk about the technology brain interface that we saw on the last story through the catheter, and then take that those same types of technologies and completely reverse it to where now the brain is feeling the sense of a mechanical device in this case, so that somebody can actually feel touch in a robotic hand. It's awesome. It really shows that we're getting to a point in some of this technology where things can radically, radically change in a very positive way.
Right. And if there's an ability to essentially take advantage of that human machine interface, that the APIs, if you will, that the human brain can use, all of a sudden we open up all kinds of possibilities for people with injuries or with illnesses that could be made to feel and to be able to do the sorts of things that they used to before.
Yeah.
Just absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
All right. Well, Michael, we are about at time.
We are.
So yeah. So I was just looking at the clock. Is there anything I hesitate to ask, because I think the answer is no, but is there anything you're playing recently here that is kind of fun that you'd like to share?
Actually, yes. I have a new game.
Oh,
well,
have
that's
you?
Not pasting that link in there worth a crappioli. This is an iOS game called Inks, Inks. And you can find it over at inksgame.com. I think it was $3, but I had gotten a credit in the iTunes store after I purchased my new phone, and I didn't realize it because I did the phone purchase through the Apple Store app, and I went in there and I saw there was a notification. They're like, oh, you got a free credit for a game, and it was this game, and it's kind of a pinball simulator. But not in the traditional sense of you want to get a high score. You actually want a very, very low score. And you have two little flippers, and you shoot a ball up into the pinball machine, and you're trying to hit these wall bumpers of different colors and splatter an ink design onto the pinball surface. And you want to get all the colors hit with the least amount of balls. And if you can get all the colors hit on the first shot and the first bump of the first ball, you get a star. Otherwise, you get a 1, 2, 3 type score based on how many balls it took you to get it. And then after you make the design, it will then, the ball will roll into a little gutter and fall out of the ball, out of the table. And it's kind of relaxing. There's lots of different weird patterns. There's different types of bumpers, etc. But it creates these really kind of cool color designs.
Oh, so it does. You know, it's funny. I actually have this game too. I just hadn't played it before, and I just did. And it's pretty.
It's kind of fun. Yeah.
Soothing, relaxing.
Yeah. So.
And even the splash screen, the welcome screen, is a game that you can play.
Exactly. Exactly. So. I had seen somebody talking about this on another podcast, and I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of interesting. And then I saw that it was in my free queue, and I said, I'll give it a shot. And It's I don't play it much, but yeah, it's fun. It's a good game.
Cool.
How about yourself? Do you have any time for any games lately? Other than I hear you just started a brand new game called Inks Game.
I've just started a brand new game called Inks Game. Yeah, so that's kind of fun. So that's really been my case too. I've been running around doing things, keeping super busy, but having a lot of fun with Alumni Band was my biggest game thing. So I was out in the hurricane rain. I should show you this too. It's kind of funny. The UNC band actually got called out on ESPN as being out in the rain, and the analyst from ESPN said, "I hope the tubas didn't fill up with water." And I can tell you that they didn't. At least mine didn't, because I was checking pretty frequently to make sure I didn't fill up with water.
Yes, it would have been funny if you ever put a little bit of hand soap in there, and then as you start filling up with water, you could play bubble music.
Bubbles. Turn off the bubble machine. Yes.
Well, we thank everybody for keeping in touch with us with this show and visiting our site over at gamesatwork.biz. Take some time if you got some time and would like to do it, and give us a rating on the iTunes store and podcasts. We'd appreciate that. It really helps us get new listeners. And drop us a tweet over at games@work_biz.
We'd love to hear from you. And with that, I think we'll close for the day. So, see ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.